belongs to your neighbor. Here ends the reading for this day. Thanks be to God. So last Sunday, we started to delve into the book of Exodus, and we're going to continue to do that today. We did a lot of the major stories in Genesis previous to this. But if you remember last Sunday, we left with Exodus 14, which has been called one of the most important chapters and stories in the whole Hebrew Bible, because it talks about God saving people from slavery and that God cares about those who are suffering. So the Red Sea was parted, the Israelites got to go through, and the slave masters, the captors, the Egyptians drowned in the sea. That was last Sunday. So that was Exodus 14. And I told you we're going to build up to 19 and 20, which is where we are for today. In Exodus 15, I told you there was a third version of that story that was a song version. In Exodus 16, we find the people wandering through the wilderness. And that becomes a phrase that even we use today. If we feel lost in our life, we might say, I'm wandering through the wilderness in my life right now. Well, the Israelites were doing this for 40 years. And they started to complain a lot to Moses. And I can't blame them. So in Exodus 16, the people are complaining that they don't have food to eat. And so God sends bread from heaven, which is called manna. It's this special bread that settles on as dew on the grasses in the morning, and they're able to eat it. And God sends quail. So they have bread, they have meat. And then Exodus 17, the people are complaining again. They keep saying the same phrase over and over. It would have been better if you just would have left us with the Egyptians to die than to bring us here to die in the desert. The people don't have water. I would complain too. So God tells Moses to take up your staff, that same one that you used to part the Red Sea, and to strike it on a big rock, and that water is going to come out of this rock. And it happens. And so the people are provided with bread, with meat, with water. And that's Exodus 17. 18, the chapter right before where we start today, is very interesting to me. It says that all day long, the people come up to Moses from sunup to sundown, and Moses acts as their judge. So any kind of disputes that they have, any arguments, they bring it to Moses. Moses is the only person that they bring it to. And all day long, Moses sits there and judges and says, okay, you're right, you're wrong. This is what you need to do to make this right. And Moses' father-in-law, whose name is Jethro, looks at what's going on and says, Moses, you can't keep doing this. You are going to burn yourself out. Here's what I think you should do. I think you should find some trustworthy people in each tribe, and appoint them to be judges over certain segments of society. And then you only need to deal with the big stuff. They'll handle the little arguments and then bring the big stuff to you. And so that's what happens right before our text for today. In Exodus 19, where we started, the people have been wandering in the wilderness, and they come upon a mountain. And this mountain is Mount Sinai. Kenny, are you back there? Can you do the next slide? This is a picture. You can see up in Egypt, that red line, that's where they started, and they crossed over the Red Sea. And then you can see they follow the water. So they go all the way down that Sinai Peninsula, and there's a little triangle at the bottom. And that's where they run into this mountain, Mount Sinai. And eventually, over 40 years, they're going to travel all the way up that peninsula and eventually get to the promised land, the land of Canaan. You can put that next slide on as well. This is the modern day. This is what it looks like. So you see Egypt in green, and you see that little triangle. That's the Sinai Peninsula. So that's where they went to. Thank you, Kenny. So in our text today, they come upon this mountain, Mount Sinai. And God calls to Moses from the mountain. You hear the voice of God coming from this great structure of landscape. And God says, please tell these people, the Israelites, the ones that have descended from Jacob. And remember, Jacob's name got changed into Israel after they wrestled with each other, God and Jacob. Tell these people who descended from Jacob, from Isaac, from Abraham and Sarah, that I want to make a covenant with them. I want to be in close relationship with these people. I've already been part of their lives by bringing them out of slavery, but I want to continue to be their God. And so in order for us to be in a close relationship, I am going to let them know of my expectations, of how I want them to treat me and how to treat each other. And I'm going to expect these people to do their best to live up to these expectations. And so God shares 10 of them. Yahweh shares these 10 with Moses, and Moses passes along to the people. And these 10 are called the Decalogue, and that means 10 words from Hebrew to Greek to English. So these are the 10 commandments that we learn about in the book of Exodus. And the first four of them have everything to do with how to be in relationship with God. Some people think that the first commandment, the one, thou shalt not have any other gods before me, they think that that commandment is asserting monotheism. Mono meaning one, theism meaning the belief of God. So the belief that there is only one God. But actually, folks in ancient cultural environments just automatically believed in polytheism. Poly means many. Theism means the belief in God. So they already just believed that there are very many gods. But this first commandment is telling the Israelites that even if you believe in all these other gods that are, you know, the gods of these tribes and these nations and these peoples and these waters and these mountains, you're not supposed to put any of them before me, in front of me. You're not to worship them, even if you acknowledge their presence. Then, we're not going to go through every commandment, but I do want to touch on this second one. The second commandment, I remember the first time I read it, and I was like, that is messed up. I did not like the second commandment. Yahweh says to not make any idols, for I am a jealous God, and for the parents' fault or sin, I punish the children, the grandchildren, and the great-grandchildren of those who turn from me. When I first read that, it sounded like a very wrathful and vengeful God, one who was unfair, and I don't believe in that God. But then, I've been learning a little bit about a scientific theory called epigenetic inheritance. And it's caused me to ponder more about this particular covenant and commandment. So please allow me to share a little bit of what I've learned about this big, great, big word, epigenetic inheritance. So there was a conclusion from a research team at a hospital in New York. And get this, the hospital where this study was done was called Mount Sinai, the same mountain where the people of Israel had gotten to. And the lead researcher, her name was Rachel Yehuda, and she led a team of people to do a genetic study on 32 Jewish men and women who had either been held in Nazi concentration camps or who had witnessed or experienced torture or who had to hide during the Second World War because of their identity, because they were Jewish. So these researchers, they analyzed the genes, the genetic components of these 32 men and women, but also the genes of their children. And they found that those who were children of Holocaust survivors had an increased likelihood of stress disorders, especially when they compared the genes to other children of Jews who had not been in Europe during the war. And so what the research was finding was that it was an example in humans of a transmission of trauma to a child, and this is what is called epigenetic inheritance, and that our environmental influences like smoking or diet or stress, that these things can be passed on through your genes to your children and great-grandchildren and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So to me, this does not mean that God punishes people for the sins of their parents, but that all of our actions have consequences, some of which affect many generations after us, even on a genetic level. So this commandment causes me to think about the far-reaching effects of making and worshiping other things that are not God, that are not spirit. So the effects of when we turn money or material things or success or anything else into an idol over and above God or love or spirit. It caused me to look at that second commandment in a totally different way. I said the first four were about being in a relationship with God. The last six of the commandments were all about guiding the Israelites about how to live together in a loving community. So honor your elders. That's how I interpret honor your mother and father. Those people around us that are older than us, that mother us and that father us. So to honor our elders. Do not kill. Do not commit adultery. Don't steal, lie, or envy. And then, of course, many years later, Jesus, who was quite familiar with these 10 words, this Decalogue from Moses, he says this whenever a lawyer tests him with a question. And the question was, "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" And there were many more laws in the tradition than just these 10 that he was familiar with. But Jesus replied in this way. He said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and you should love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments," Jesus says, "hang all the law and all the prophets." So whenever modern-day Christians lobby to have the Ten Commandments prominently displayed outside the state capitol building, I often wonder why they never lobby to have "love your neighbor as yourself" engraved in stone instead. The purpose of the Ten Commandments, of this covenant, this code of conduct, was not for punitive reasons. It was not in order to catch offenders and then to punish them for not following these 10 rules. The purpose was to provide structure for positive growth, to honor one another with respect when we live in community together, and to provide safety within the community. So to me, this is the best reason for anyone to abide by a code of conduct or rules or guidelines. As an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ, I have agreed to uphold a very long but important code of ethics. And among this code, some of these following are some of the promises that I have made. I will preach and teach the gospel without fear or favor. I will speak the truth in love. I will seek to call forth and nurture the gifts of others in the church and join their gifts with mine for the sake of the mission of Jesus and the health of this church. I will regard all persons with equal respect and concern and undertake to minister impartially. I will not use my position, power, or authority to exploit any person. I will live a life which honors my commitments to my own personal family. And I will honor my need for time, for physical and spiritual renewal, recreation, and vacation. So by me upholding these guidelines, then respect and safety and positive growth can be fostered in our community. So these 10 commandments in this ordained minister's code are just two examples of guidelines that do foster safe and respectful community. And I'm wondering if you can think of any other set of rules or guidelines or codes of conduct that you are expected to uphold in your own personal life. Maybe these are listed at a school that you attend, maybe in a work or a volunteer setting that you are part of, maybe as part of an organization that you are a member of, or even within your own household or your own neighborhood. In many ways, it is much easier to live in community with one another when the expectations and guidelines are clear and communicated. So my prayer for us this week is to review and reflect upon the guidelines that govern our lives and to work towards a safe and respectful community in our own midst. May it be so. Amen. Amen. Let us be in a time.